Your book is a story about a boy meets girl, girl meets boy, but it's much more than that. It's like they have Israel, Palestine tattooed on their foreheads and in their minds and in their hearts.
That's a very nice way to put it, to say that they are tattooed with their nationalities and they do all that is in their power to not see the tattoo in one another. It's a very nice choice of metaphor. Thank you. Yes, it's true. It's true. They are a boy and a girl meeting overseas in New York, and they're young and free and talented and having their self-explored one through the other, as usually love gives us a mirror to learn about ourselves through the one that we get closest to. In this case, they see a portrait not only of themselves in particular, but also of their origin, their sides of the conflict, the opposite sides of the conflict. And they learn so much about the other that was actually raised in the next door. They're the same age, more or less, so they were growing up under the same sun, but between them it was like the neighbor that they never met. There was a wall, there was a curtain. So now the curtain is open, so they can see eye to eye. And New York allows them an equal ground. Back at home, she's the superior because she has her liberty, her independency, her state, all her privileges as being an Israeli Jew. And him being a Palestinian Muslim, he is under occupation. So the ground is twisted. In New York, they somehow are allowed to speak English that is none of each other's language. And they can enjoy the time and the quietness to fundamentally learn who the other is. If it was happening, for example, somewhere in the Middle East, there was pressure and there was influence of all the circles of relatives and friends and family, they wouldn't be able to see each other in a lucid lens. And that's a great benefit, because they do. This is what New York gives them, the surface to love.
You talked about freedom, but there's also, let's say, a freedom of time, but also like a jail, because they know that the time is limited. It's only 6 months before she has to return to Israel in May. And when she talks to her sister, she describes it as an adventure in time. What does it do to their love, to their relationship, to know that the time is limited in many ways, but in this way?
Yes, beyond all the boundaries that goes between those two, there is the additional choice that their love is doomed to be kept only in New York and only in this amount of time that they can share during that winter of 2002. They cannot imagine a future together, and they even don't allow, at least the narrator, the lady, the girl, the Israeli one, she doesn't allow herself to go beyond this frame of limited time and space. What does it make? It makes the story more dramatic and intense. It makes the forbidden fruit to be sweeter. And it puts the identity exploration of one another to be more stressed, in a sense that their sense of shared destiny is much more clearer and demanding, knowing that they have this limited time and space, yet somehow it captures the sense that they sail at the same boat, that there is a mutual faith that bonds them. And apparently it happens in the story as well. I mean, it portrayed itself with the conclusion of their love story, with their with the elaboration after what happens when each of them goes back to his own tribe back at home, and how their paths do combine down the road.
You said that, and this is also something that I read in the book, that the girl, Liat, sees more of the obstacles than the boy, Hilmi. He sees more of the possibilities. He always talks about the possibility of being together. And this is somehow connected to the two states, Israel and Palestine, as well as Liat always talks about the two-state solution, and Hilmi about one state, one body solution.
Wonderful read. Yes, it's not only a political position that they contrary one another. It's also their romantic attitude. The way Liat sees relationship between a man and a woman, romantic intimate relationship, is a two-state solution. It's one person neighboring the other. Yet there is a borderline, there is an outline that is defining the two selves. The way Hilmi sees intimate love to be is one mixed, squished into each other's body and soul and spirit, and he wants a unification that is much more hermetic and perfect. They are both not practical, because his idea of unification is ideal, and her preserved, fearful concept of relationship is somehow sterile. But I kind of take a ride on their opposite ways of seeing the solution for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, to say something about, I mean, love and peace, they play this strange duet throughout the novel. Sometimes I talk about peace and I actually refer to love, and sometimes I talk about love and I actually refer to peace. There is about those two equivalents that I'm playing with it. I'm playing with them. And it's true. It's a very good point that he sees possibilities and her seeing obstacles. Him is not only a man, him is not only an artist, as a contrast to her being a woman and being more of a rational linguistic person. They also have this huge difference of their habitat, him being raised in a Muslim society and her being raised in a Jewish society. And although these two cultures are very, they're sisters, there's a huge difference between the way Jews relate to newcomers and Muslims relate to newcomers. So him grew up in a more welcoming religion for new members. And her, she was built, her view was shaped by Judaism that is much more exclusive, much more kept to itself, and not really into growing the community.
When she returns to Tel Aviv in May, and Hilmi comes to Ramallah as well, and they keep contact by telephone. They can't meet in person. Would it be possible for them to meet in person, to live together in Israel or in Palestine?
It would have been a very complex and challenging destiny. Yeah. There are a few examples. Some of them are very happy. Some of their kids are studying in one of the three bilinguistic schools in Israel up until ninth grade, including kindergarten. And I think they could be taken as the perhaps future of the two people living in coexistence together, and perhaps even more than coexistence, in harmony, in intimacy. But I think at this time, with this spirit of this time, with this political climate that the world is going and the region particularly, it's not an easy choice to make, to choose to sleep with the enemy, to build a house, a home with the enemy, to have the other and you share this complex reality anyway, but having the two opposites identities at the same household, and to have kids that their identity is hyphenated, hybrid. It's a choice that I hope that whoever makes it succeeded, just for the sake of being happy and healthy. But the official authorities don't make easy life on those people, not on the Palestinian side and not on the Israeli side.
And your book was banned as well, just because of this.
From the high school curriculum.
Yes.
They were stating in their arguments to ban the book from the curriculum that it might encourage assimilation between Jews and Arabs, because it will encourage them to get involved romantically. And they want the Jewish-Israeli kids not to be exposed to such an option. Oh, yeah. What can I do? What can I do? It's only one example of few examples of how the right-wing regime religiously controlling Israel nowadays and trying to change it from within and reshape our democracy in a sense that it becomes something totally different than what we recognize ourselves with being liberal and democratic state. I worry for my place. I think this book had various reasons to be written. I mean, you need a very much of an emotional commitment, and you need your narcissistic needs to be fulfilled in writing. Otherwise, you don't make it through the marathon of writing for 5 to 6 years. This took more than 6 years. But there was also the need for myself to write a book that would be a self-portrait for me as an Israeli. And for this, to tell about being an Israeli, I chose to place the story in New York. It sounds like a strange thing to do. But from New York, I opened this telescope that would look the most microscopically into what I call being an Israeli, because of this foreignerness, that the unfamiliarity that New York allows and the climate of New York allows, and the contrary of falling in love with the Palestinian men away from home. It allowed me to say something crucial about what it is to be a young Israeli nowadays. And apparently I can take the ban of the book to be somehow of a compliment that I've done a good job.
Yeah. I would like you to tell me something about the title of the book, because you have a quotation from the Hebrew poet Ayot Yeshurun. Did I pronounce it somehow right?
It's a pseudonym. His name is Avot Yeshurun. It's one of Israel's prominent poets. And he has a takeoff on a quote from the Bible saying that all the rivers are running towards the sea, yet the sea is not fulfilled with them. And here he relates to those rivers as the floating of aspiration, of longings, of missings, that it's an endless source that can never be filled. This is the, he says, Zehusod Torat Haga'aguim. This is how he says it in Hebrew. He's a very sophisticated poet. I'm not sure I always understand all of his poems, but this one was so sharply relating to the way I learned to understand the Palestinian psyche only after I came close to my muse, the person I dedicate the book to, my inspiration, Hassan Khourani, who from which from him I sculpted I sculptured the character of Hilmi. It's only after I got to know Hassan that I understood how much the sea and the longing for the sea and whatever it captures, not only the subliminal, not only the subconscious, not only the universal code for an eternal womb, but also the ethos of what was lost, what was the past before 1948. The sea capture and folds all these memories of what has been lost for them. It's not so much the land, it's more the sea. So, or the interpretation, the land through the sea. But then I could see that there is a longing that should be fulfilled, that cannot be dismissed.
Yeah, and the sea and the water is very central in this book as well. And he paints the water and the sea very much. So he uses the blues and the green colors very much. But still, he says he can't swim, he can't drive, and he can't shoot. And from the almost from the beginning of the book, you know that it's going to be a sad ending to the story. And he goes to the sea, and he goes into the sea, and he can't swim. So there's, from the beginning, you know that the time is limited for the boy and the girl in two ways. That the reader knows, but not the girl in the beginning.
This reader knows. This good reader knows. Thank you. You really reassure me that the translation is good. You know, I didn't know it. I've been here since Tuesday. I spoke to some interviewers. I swear to God, it's only through you that I can see how good the translation is, because you nailed it. In such a way that I can, okay, because I cannot tell what is this written here, you see?
No, I know. Yeah, and you said you dedicated it to
Hassan.
And what I've read about Hassan is very close to Hilmi in the book, and Liat is very close to you. So yeah. I suppose it's quite a personal story you've written.
It is a personal story, but I'm too much of a novelist to be loyal only to what happened, or who am I, or who was he. I am, my greatest joy in writing novels is to reinvent, is to imagine, is to pour imagination into my memory and to mix it together into fiction. So if it was a memoir, to say so, it wouldn't have taken me more than 6 years to write it. It would have been done much easily. But I had to restage it, relive it in my mind to make it fiction. So it does have very strong... that's very stable source in my memory, in the reality that we used to live together. But it is also very much liberated to be told in a storytelling skills that would make it itself. And that's what I'm proud for.
How was the book received in Israel and in Palestine?
In Israel it was received very well. It was praised, awarded, it was sold very well. Then came the ban, then came all this support I got from the Israelis, who find it to be a symbol to the freedom of speech. And they were like marching to bookshops and buying tons of copies to make it a declaration of their loyalty to the freedom of speech and their this Minister of Education's choice to ban it from the curriculum. What's most interesting is those letters that I get from the West Bank and from Gaza and from the diaspora of Palestinians, that they read it. First, those who read it in Hebrew, knew Hebrew and could read it in Hebrew, were most encouraging. Then came those who read it in German and in English and in French, and it's fantastic. It's fantastic when not only that you had your beloved friend that you wanted to relive and to have him, his memory carried out in the world. It's also the fact that people find him to be so authentically told that they see themselves in his creation. So I'm flattered by this. It reassures me in a way that perhaps not any other kind of readers could have been given me a gift of reassurance. They're okay is 10 times worthy, knowing that I've done a good job.